Let's get started properly. Today is Sunday, January 14th, 2018, and I want to say hello to the students in front of me. I know that they're more coming. And I want to say hello to all those listening across the expanse of the universe. We're in the middle of a series of Hakarat HaTov. You're walking in, young ladies, to a series of due to the fact that I had a certain big birthday and I wanted to celebrate it my way, and I didn't entirely succeed in celebrating it my way, but at least this much I have been able to do to say thank you to five individuals that influenced my spiritual gestalt. And today we're dealing with the fourth individual. We've spoken about Reb Henoch Fishman, the Shanghai crowd. We spoke about Reb Meir Kahana, Bnei Akiva. We spoke about Reb Aaron Cutler, Lakewood. And I just want to add one addendum. If you recall, when I finished out the Reb Aaron Cutler, I mentioned that when I did learn in Lakewood, there was a lot of criticism of Chabad, the whole story of Shoshana Gachatapara. Can you take a Gemara, which is essentially Torts, which is Nezikin, which is halachic, and go and interpret it spiritually, homiletically? Very interesting question. Obviously, if you're a chassid, your answer would be yes, I can do it. I also mentioned that part of the criticism of Chabad lately, and anyone involved in scholarship knows, the question surfaces the Dvar Hatzalah and their relationship to the Chabadnikim in Shanghai, particularly after Reb Aaron reaches America and becomes a dominant force, if not the dominant force in the Bar Hatzalah. And here you have to understand, Reb Lazer Silva, who founded it, is sort of steps aside and lets Reb Aaron take over. And did Reb Aaron really give an order, help out the Mira crowd, not the Chabad crowd? And I said, this is a question that has to be explored. A very prominent Chabad Rav was in touch with me, and he claims he has documents, memoir literature, that it absolutely is so that Chabadnikim were ignored, and to the benefit of the Mira crowd in Shanghai. Anyway, I don't have the documents. Once I'll see them and be able to evaluate them properly, I'll talk about the documents at that time. But until then, let the issue hang fire, and other people have to pick up the research. Why Reb Aaron had this negative attitude, and that translates already to Rav Shach. Those of you who lived in Israel, I'm living here 49 years, and I can tell you that in the 70s into the 80s, the world was shaking here with the split in Agudat Yisrael, the split between the Litvakim, the Chassidim. It's a very sad story. It carries over even today, although the truth has to be told that the personalities like Reb Chaim Kanievsky and Reb Aryeh Steinman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, and others have a much more positive attitude towards Chabad. They say Reb Gershon Edelstein as well, and maybe the breach can be healed somewhat. But I'm not prepared to really give a definitive answer until I see documents and memoir literature. But the question that I raised is legitimate, and that has been acknowledged across the world. What the answer is, let someone take it further and do a doctorate on it, a PhD thesis. Okay, now we started with Rabbi Yaakov Meishel Cohen lesson, and this takes us into a totally different world. A world that unfortunately does not exist on a wide extent. We still have pockets of it, and I'll show you something very fascinating, Minashamayim Zikuni, something that just happened these last few days. Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen lesson, I gave you his years last week, 1889, 1975. And to be very brief, here was a man who was raised in Slabodka, raised by the Alter of Slabodka at Matan Zvi Finkel, got caught up in the Muslim movement, was a Shtadrav in Lithuania, and after World War One, the Slabodka yeshiva had to deal with a problem that to a certain degree haunts us until today. It's better in Israel because the facts of life in Israel create reality. But in the Litvische Welt, due to Reb Chaim's influence, the intellectual approach, what we call Shnei Drachim, always seeing everything two different ways. I can give examples that take me an hour, it's not important now. But if you've studied Bris, you know that everything can be analyzed two different ways. I always tell the story of what happened in YU in the early 60s when the Rebbeim was set up by the students. Every Rebbe got the same question. We were teaching the Sechet Kedushin. I apologize to the ladies here for this example, but it's a true story. So if you've learned Masechet Kedushin, you know Haisha, you can marry a woman in three different ways. Kesef Shtabdiya. Then you have Perek Sheni here that you can marry her, you can send a shliach to marry her. So very innocently I get the question, and this goes back maybe to 62, 63, I get the question, Rebbe, can you send a shliach to be Mekadosh Isha for you al Yedei Bia? You follow the question? So I look at the class, Baruch Hashem, I had seen Chidushei Torah from Shurkin of Chaim Berlin. A few weeks earlier, and he asked the very question, and he says, "Over from Reb Chaim," and this is typical Reb Chaim. There are two different types of acquisition kinyanim. One kinyan is the universal form, the way I buy a field, the way I buy a car, the way I whatever you can sell. There's universal forms of kinyan. Buying an isha is no different. But relations between a man and wife, by definition, is ishut. It's not universal. So when can you make a shliach when it goes with universal concepts? Just like I can make a shliach, Sam, to buy a car for me, to buy a house for me, I can make a shliach to buy a wife for me. But when it comes to dinner yishut, no shlichut is possible. And I gave that answer. And that's Reb Chaim. So I found out later I was unanimously selected by the students as the greatest Rebbe in the yeshiva. Why? They made a comparison. Other Rebbeim, let's take Reb Leibel Dulitz. The kid who asked the question of Reb Leibel, Leibel picked him up and threw him out of the room, across the room, if you know Reb Leibel Dulitz. Other Rebbeim gave the answer. It's the classic answer. When you know Kala Torah Kula, you'll ask stupid questions like that. And Rothkopf took it seriously and answered. But you see, that's Reb Chaim. Everything Reb Chaim. Everything Reb Chaim, the dual approach. Give you another example. That's a sad example. And the Rav used this example time and again. That we all know the halacha is, whoever dies first is buried first. All right, Kavod HaMet, you don't want the person to remain unburied for a long time. You saw Rav Steinman left the Tzava, I think within 6 hours he was to be buried, and I think within they missed 6 hours by a few minutes. So what happened was, a wealthy man, a poor man died first, and then a wealthy man died in Brisk, and the Chevra Kadisha saw the wealthy man, you understand, they buried him first. They were paid off, Baruch Hashem. The family of the poor man went crying to Reb Chaim. So Reb Chaim opens up Rambam, flips the pages, and he tells the family of the poor man, you're absolutely right, what the Chevra Kadisha did was sinful, but there's nothing to do with you. You go home, sit Shiva, and I'll chop the heads of the Chevra Kadisha off. So Reb Chaim calls in the Chevra Kadisha, gives them hell. How dare you, how do you treat a poor man like this? Just because he was poor, the wealthy man was wealthy, you buried him first. So the Talmidim asked Reb Chaim, Rebbe, you don't understand. You opened the Rambam, you looked at the Rambam, the halacha doesn't appear in the Rambam. If the poor people were right, why did you tell them, go home and sit Shiva? And if they go home and sit Shiva, then they're not right. And why did you tell the Chevra Kadisha off? So Rav Chaim said, "Ah, don't you understand? Yes, the question, what does it mean that you have to bury the person who dies first, has to be buried first? Is it a din in kibbut hamet, in halvayat hamet, kavod hamet, or is it a general halacha? Ein mavid in al hamitzvah." Right? You all know, mitzvah boliyot chatach mitzena. There's a whole shaila if you take out your tefillin before you take out your talit in the morning. Could be you have to put the tefillin on first. If you take out the shel rosh before you take out the shel yad, could be you have to put the shel rosh on first. So Chaim said, I opened up the Rambam and I looked at the Rambam, and the Rambam doesn't mention it in Hilchot Avel. If the Rambam doesn't mention it in Hilchot Avel, it shows it's not a specific law that has to do with kavod hamet, with respect for the dead. It's not a chevra kadisha law. It's a general law. So he told the poor people, look, the chevra kadisha are a bunch of sinful individuals, but they didn't sin against you. They sinned against me as Rav of the Shtat, that they didn't do the first mitzvah that came to their hands. But it has nothing to do with kavod hamet. So you go home and sit shiva, and I'll tell them off. See, and you with me, Yitzchak? And this is typical Rav. You know who gives this example? The Rav gave this example many times. You know who else gives it? Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin in Ishim Vishita gives the same example. So what do you see from here? Rav Chaim introduced this duality of thinking. So the wind-up was that in all the Litvishi Yeshivat, Psak came to a halt. No one could paskin. It's not like the Chassidish Yeshivas where a kid of 12 is learning Chulin. A kid of 12 already is learning the Turim, is learning the Beis Yosef. A kid of 12 is already learning how to paskin. The Litvishi Yeshivat, no one could paskin. So the Altov Slabodka organized the Kollel right after World War I. He organized the Kollel L'Psak Halacha, and one of the big fundraisers was Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessig. He was very devoted to this Kollel. An example of who the Kollel turned out that you all know is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky studied in this Kollel L'Psak in Slabodka, and Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Yaakov was the exception to the rule. He knew how to paskin. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was another exception to the rule, but he was an exception to the rule because he never learned in a famous yeshiva. He really learned with his father, his uncle, and Rabbi Pesach Pruskin, who was Shikalov Rav, but he never learned in a big yeshiva. There was the communist takeover already, it was a different world, he was in Russia, so Rabbi Moshe was a posek because it was part of the family tradition. All right, so this was Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessig, an individual who would have remained in Europe, would have been a Shtat Rav in Europe, involved in the Slabodka Yeshiva. And here you take a look, and I ended off the class last week, from his first Sefer, Derech HaChaim. The Sefer is dedicated to no less than his wife, two sons, a daughter, a brother, three sisters and their families, all killed by Hitler. How was the man saved? He happened to be in, I believe it was Switzerland at the time, fundraising for Slabodka, and he was able to get to America. So someone asked me, I took for granted, understood what I was saying, someone asked me, what kind of compliment is this? He leaves his wife and children behind. He runs to America. Don't you understand? They ran to America in the hopes they could save the family from America. This is why Reb Aaron Cutler wound up in America. The whole idea was get someone to America and they can operate from America. And Reb Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessig had a son-in-law who was an American citizen, a name that you all know, Harav Avigdor Miller, who grew up in Yeshiva Shir Pesachol Chanan in the 1920s into the 30s, but later was no friend of the yeshiva, as we shall see. And he was able to bring his father-in-law to America in the hopes they would get out the rest of the family. All that they got out was the daughter married to Rav Avigdor Miller, and the son, Rav Lessen had a son who was a Rav in New York, who has a son who's a hand surgeon, a very famous medical doctor out on the coast. That's the other part of the family that survived. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, of all the people I knew of the Europeisha crowd, and all my Rebbeim were of European origins, you didn't see a Rebbe who was born and bred in America in the 1940s into the 50s, even into the early 60s, was unheard of. He was totally at home with America. And that's, I ended off my last class before I left for the States. I mentioned that we're going to come back to it. We're going to come back to it in this series. We're going to come back to it in the Monday series. He had been in America on an extended visit, 1924, and that was the Central Relief. We'll go into more detail in the Monday class, but they brought three great rabbanim to America to raise $1 million for the yeshiva in Palestine and Eastern Europe. Who did they bring? The most famous rabbi of all, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the chief rabbi, Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Palestine. They brought Rav Avraham Dovber, Kahana Shapiro, the Kovner Rav, the Deva Avraham, the Masmich of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and they brought the Rosh Yeshiva of Slabodka, the Levush Mordechai, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein. Each one had a Shamus with him. And the Shamus of the Levush Mordechai was Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. And he got to see America. They went from New York to Boston to Detroit to Montreal to Toronto to Philadelphia. Wherever there were Jews, they went and held public sessions and raised money. And he knew what America was about. At 24. And he was not cynical. Many of my rebbeim, when they spoke about America, they right away became cynical and they could, no future, no hope. They could find all the faults in America. And Rav Lessen had a much more positive attitude. Okay. Now, I want to talk, what did he teach? What was his message? Where was he different? And here I quote to you from the introduction of his work, his first sefer, published many svarim, all in the same derech of understanding Chazal, understanding first of all Tanakh, understanding Chazal, derech Chaim, sichat musariyot minyanei yirah midot v'dat Torah. This was published in 1947, and here he begins with something that tantalizes me until today. What is the difference between, these are his exact words, what is the difference between Musa and Darshanut? Okay. Sam, you're the grandson of a great Darshan. Right or wrong?
You'd say so.
I would hope so. I just had to give a drasha. They want me to give a drasha in Hollywood, Florida. So how do you approach a drasha? I'm paraphrasing Rav Lessen, but I want to bring it to life. Dov, I have a message I want to give in Hollywood, that Torah Umada Yeshiva University is the greatest idea in the world. That's the message I want to give. But you can't just give a drasha, you have to take a text. So I will take a text and hang my hat on it. I will force the text to say what I want to say. That is Darshanut. I challenge anyone to say that I'm incorrect. Well, what did I do? Very simple. 1959, I had for homiletics in Yeshiva University, Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein. To have known, to know these were giants that we had. I studied with the three big ones, Rabbi Goldstein, Rabbi Lichtenstein, and Rabbi Young. Do you remember them? You too studied? Rabbi Young, Leo Young, we had in college Jewish philosophy, but
I didn't have Rabbi Goldstein.
You didn't have Goldstein. Who did you have instead?
Rackman, Lipstein.
Ah, you had Rackman. All right, I had Goldstein instead of Rackman. Anyway, now Rabbi Goldstein assigns every week a different Pashra student has to dashen. So he signs Vayechidimi. My word of honor, every syllable I'm telling you here is correct. You're going to see what happens to me. Ah, oh, did I dashen a drush of Vayechi? They tell Yosef at Tzaddik, your father is sick. He grabs his two sons. And Yaakov Avinu says, "Mi Elo, who are these kids?" My dear friends, I am a great-grandfather, many times over, all right? Believe me, if my grandchildren are going to bring their children to see me, even if my eyes aren't the best, like Yaakov Avinu, you are going to recognize who those great-grandchildren are. Cut it out. Yaakov Avinu says, "Mi Elo." What's going on here? Huh? So the young Rothkopf comes up with a meridic shot. Fabulous. Ephraim and Manasseh. They worked in the court of Pharaoh. They worked with their father. Now how are we dressed? Look the way I'm dressed. Modern clothes. But when they went to see Yaakov Avinu, they changed their clothes. They put on lange begotim, a shtreimel, a bekesher, a gatel, tzitzitz and dreisim. But this time they said, "God have mercy, you're younger, they're older people here. We've all been through it where the hospital calls you. Come, quick, you may still see your parent alive." All right? Lo aleinu. Do you have time to change? You rush, Sam, you rush. Yosef and Tzaddik rushed with his two grandchildren, his two children. Yaakov Avinu doesn't recognize them. He's not, of course he knew who they were. But min geit hazeh, min geit figoyim? You're going like non-Jews? This is the way you're dressed? What a disgrace. Mi eila. And Yosef HaTzadik says, "Banayim, these are my children, but God gave them to me here in this land, Eretz Yisrael. They're living with dual culture. We have no choice. We're ger v'toshav. Start to feel it, Dov? Ger v'toshav. Eretz Yisrael." Ah, suddenly Yaakov Avinu wakes up and he understands. V'yikavechem shmi v'shem avotai Avraham v'yitzchak. Let them be good Jews. Let them continue the traditions. V'yitkul erov b'kerev ha'aretz. But they have to amount to something. They have to be successful in this land, in this Egyptian culture. Oh my, what a drasha. And then you can understand what happens Friday night. I only have daughters, thank God. Wonderful daughters. So my eldest daughter lives near us. We came home exhausted, wiped out. Florida, the weather, we deserve a refund. We could have taught Torah at a different time. Didn't see any sun 2 weeks. But all right, they boast it's only 39 degrees in Florida when it's -1 in New York. So that's their boast. But wow, rain, no sun, unbelievable. I had my daughter Friday night. Well, my daughter is a grandmother many times over, but when she's with her parents, she's a little kid. You have to give her a bracha. Simecha lokim, yisara rifka racha b'leia. That bracha makes sense, Rabbi Wiener. But the bracha you got from your father, Yisimcha l'kim k'efraim u'kam Menashe, where's Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu? Why do we give the kid a bracha like this? Because we're saying to the kid, we don't know what life holds for you. You're in Holyoke now. Who knows where you will be later in life? But we're saying to the kid, no matter where you will be, Yisimcha Lokim Kefarayim Ucham Nasha, that you will be able to keep up the tradition, V'yitkul L'rov B'kavet Ha'aretz, V'yikai V'hem Shmi, V'shem Avot Avraham V'yitzchak. Huh? What do you say? David, what do you say? A good drasha? Okay, good drasha. Word of honor, my drasha. Rabbi Goldstein's face lit up. Wow. I have an inscribed volume from him, student. Many years went by. And it changed my life, and it will change the world, but give it another 100 years. I was very fortunate. The second year of BMT, do you know what being young ladies, do you know what BMT was? Do you know what a thanks you owe to BMT? Do you know they changed the course of Anglo-Toric history? Yes or no? They don't even know BMT. The first school to export Torah to the Anglo world. The only surviving member of the initial faculty, 1969. Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, Lieutenant Colonel, my student from BMT. Second year of BMT, I had a kid, Jay Holzer. And I was matzliach with him. So his father rewarded me, started feeding me tapes of the Rav. Those tapes saved my life. It was illegal what he did, but there's an open shach in Choshen Mishpat. The Torah we're allowed occasionally to rob under the table. Our life depends upon it, Steve. So he started feeding me tapes of the Rav. My word of honor, I hear the Rav in Moria. And if you recall, in Moria, the Rav taught him a sechet, and at the last 10 minutes, he spoke on the Pasha of the week. Vayechi, exactly my drasha, word by word. Baruch Shekivanti, Lidat Gedolim. It's not enough. Herbie, are you here? Let me tell you what happened, Herbie. You won't believe it. So now you have Rothkopf giving a drasha in 1959. You have the Rav giving the same drasha. It can happen. Two minds, not the end of the world, to work the same way. He was giving it, let's say, it was a tape out of early 70s, late 60s. Herbie, open up a Malbim. And you won't believe it. We both were robbing from the Malbim and not even realizing it. Look into the Malbim who lived in the same shtanz. He was a YU person, if you know the story with the Malbim. He was caught up in the same conflict, Gev V'Toshav. And there he says, they had no time to change their clothes. They wore Jewish clothes, Malbush Yehudi, when they were with their Gzeda. And this time they had a run, Hinei Avicha Choleh, no time to change their clothes. And wow. So take a look. Three people each dashening and each one coming up with the same shot. But notice, we had an agenda. I don't have to talk about myself, me or Nochi, but the Rav, have you ever studied Rakefet's second volume, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, where the Rav describes why he loves YU, why he's at home in YU? Toru Mada, Gevet Toshav. The Malbim, Bucharest, Romania. Tzrumadi had a PhD, a doctorate. He knew many languages. They wanted him in New York. He died on the way. He was traveling already to become chief rabbi of the Lower East Side before RJJ, 1879. We had an idea. We found psukim. We bent those psukim to speak for us. That's Dashanut. Musa, the key word is Vosmin Fodet Famaich. what is demanded of you. It's not the interpretation. It's the pshat. The simple pshat. What does God want out of you? What is demanded of you? What does the Torah have to say? How can you be a better person, a better Jew? What is spirituality all about? And Musa, Rav Lesson, states it so beautifully. People explore the universe, the moon, the stars. Everything that goes in to science. And what about exploring yourself? Who are you? How do you live? What is important to you? And what Muslim means above all, be honest. Analyze. Lift up the layers that coat the human being, that make you so self-centered. What does God want out of you? What does Torah demand from you? No homiletics here, but basic, total truth. And Rav Lesson, see, there was something to his message that I had never heard before. Something to his message that I humbly state influenced my entire life until this very moment. That, right or wrong, Yitzchak, we'll spell it out. What does the Western world tell you? The kids today. Just in Florida. Okay. Me. Joy. Life. Who doesn't have in his hand the whole world? An iPod. No one talks to anyone. They send messages back and forth. No one knows how to speak. Oh, the cars they drive. There's a high school in Boca. Just look around the parking lot. How they get there. And this is the Western civilization, you see. President of the United States, whom I love, don't misunderstand me, Donald C. Trump. Didn't realize I have so many students. Wherever I went in Florida, he was quoting me.
Donald
my
J.
Donald C. Cyrus Trump. Stop embarrassing the man. Have Derek Eretz. Donald C. Trump. What's his locker room talk? My grandchildren picked up a new expression. Came back to Israel, the prime minister's son. I understand. Wow, what went on here? Wine, women, song. What a world, the Western world. Pleasure, joy. Me, here, now. Rav Lesson opened up a world. The other person, someone else, how do you interact? Bein adam lechaveiro. Opened up the world of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter to me. I can never forget this aphorism. It goes back to Rabbi Yisrael. My friend's physical needs are my spiritual needs. I repeat, my friend's physical needs are my spiritual needs. Who heard words like that? It's revolutionary. You're no longer so self-centered. Let's look at life. Who learns Torah day and night? Who doesn't look for career? Exposed to the Rav. I'm still trying to catch up to him. I'll never get there. But Steve, you can't accuse me of not trying. And you know the Rav's Rav, Talmid Chacham. The Rav Meir Dikvar, Talmud Chacham. If you think you're a Chacham, you're finished. You always have to be a Talmud, trying to be a Chacham. Who goes on Aliyah? You look at these Jews in America, I cry. Look what's happened in the United States. The Reform Movement just celebrated a treif dinner where they ate more chazer and more chazer and more chazer to relive the 1883 dinner and morons doing research. No, it didn't give birth to JTA. It's amazing how stupid people are and they're called professors. Yitzchak, you know what I'm talking about? Unbelievable. God, the world will come to an end. There won't be a Jew left. Take a look, we give chinuch, but the chinuch doesn't help. You're fighting a battle. Who comes in Aliyah? The finest, the best. Rakefet says, America gives us its trumat umaisrat. Plain and simple. The best, the finest. Thank God I wasn't in a home where there weren't a child or two living in Israel with grandchildren already. Mad at the rest of the family that they're not here in Aliyah. This is our future we're building. God, what we could do, another 100,000 American from Jews, another 100,000 Jews in Yibetul Divishomra, another 100,000 Jews casting a vote properly. Wow, the best. Who serves in the army? Who volunteers for the most difficult tasks? Do you have any idea what the army is about? It's not when you think of yourself. You cannot be a good soldier. How did Reb Nutan Zvi Finkel put it? I quote the Altar of Slabodka, a private who doesn't want to be a general is not even a good private. That's what the army has to instill. I see, I did basic. I can't say I was a great soldier, but I did a lot in my 15 years in the army, Baruch Hashem. I see my children, grandchildren. This is Musa. This is different. This is a whole different way of thinking. And then you come to the ultimate when the Mossad taps you on the shoulder and says, Rav Rakefet, Aryeh Kroll, didn't know who he was yet, didn't have a name. Anachnu yodim shata yodei eich lelameid gemara. Ata mukhan lelameid b'moskava. Who says yes? Someone who cares about other Jews, sees beyond himself, willing to put himself in danger to help the totality of the Jewish people. This is a revolutionary thought. This was the Mashgiach, this was Musa, this is Rabbi Reuben and his late wife, Zichrono Tzadeket Levracha. I can tell you about Judy. Yitzchak and I are alive and kicking, but I can tell you about Judy. When she came back from Russia, I write about it in Washington. We sent over 200 people. I would see how they acted a month, 2 months later. Some people forgot where they were already. Judy, from dawn to midnight, worked for the Russian cause. Their home became a center. Any furniture, any used appliances, anything that needed to be fixed. The Russians carting it, taking it, fixing it, distributing it. Judy at the center of all this. Right or wrong? Remember Janet Levin? I mentioned people who are no longer alive, so no one alive can say, why don't you mention me? Janet Levin learned Russian from Petach Tikva, Stanley Levin's wife. Zichrona Levracha. She learned Russian so she could help the Russians that came to the Petach Tikva area. And this is Rav Lesson. This is Musa. It opens an entire new world to you. You're no longer self-centered. You're concerned with others. Yes, it's very difficult. Doesn't catch on. The masses can't handle it. To be a chassid? To be a chassid, zazei gring, that's so easy. You can be a chassid on here, a Talmud, a dear Talmud, a world famous cardiologist. gave me a gift in Florida. Here, he said, Rebbe, you have to drink out of a New York Yankee bottle. You understand? Okay. You drink out of a Yankee bottle. To be a chassid, you lift a vodka, you drink to the Rebbe. That's a simple chassid. Chassidim gedole gaone yolem, Rav Shlomo, Rav Zevin was a Lubavitcher, Rav Kasha was a Gera, gaone gaone yolem. But there's no easy musarnik. Musar is difficult. It never caught on like Hasidus. But for those who did, who were exposed, who did appreciate, it revolutionizes the human being. Now I want to show you something. Minishamayim. There's a lot of good going on in this world. And you talk about the OU. Of course, everyone thinks in terms of Kashrut. I happen to love Menachem Ganak. I call him the Tsar of Kashrut. Rabbi Ganak and I grew up in the Bronx. He's younger than I am, but we didn't grow up that far apart. With the Bronx, so this building is a Bronx mafia. Rabbi David Miller, Rabbi Avishai David, yours truly. It's a Bronx mafia. Baruch Hashem. So, a lot of good going on. The NCSY, what they have accomplished, forget about the Kashrut. The OU, the Kashrut is fabulous. That itself is an unbelievable accomplishment. That rabbis can throw the towel in, stop taking money on a private level, have organized Kashrut, never touch the money, everything is done but kavod, and done in a way where you're not beholden to the people you give the heksha to. But I think even more than the kashrut, the jewel in the crown is the NCSY. And here, before I left Hollywood for the plane, I picked up some reading material, and this is Ignite, the latest issue of the NCSY magazine. And while I'm thinking about Rav Lesson and the shiur I'm going to give this Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, here's an article where they interview a young lady from Demda. Her name is Callie Coughlan, C-O-U-G-H-L-A-N, except the, how, Coughlan? Coughlan. Who knows?
Wasn't he the, like the...
It's all I can. This is the name of the young lady, and the young lady speaks about what the NCSY gave her. I couldn't believe my eyes. Live to give, exactly the Musa movement. Live to give. And the stories of what they're doing and the outreach and the youngsters, it warms the heart. Ashrei Ayin Ra'at Hazot. And I can tell you further, this is the secret of Chabad. When all is said and done, what I saw in Florida, and I have one story I'll talk about tomorrow, which is overwhelming. The high point of the trip, that's the way I will put it. And my Talmud, we're still dancing, my David Goldis and yours truly. So you notice Chabad. Do you realize that a Chabadnik goes Be'eretz Lo Zaruah, goes to a desert, and do you realize he makes a Cheshbon HaNefesh, what have I done today to make the Rebbe's memory rejoice? And you see that whole concept of doing for others. I told you more than once, I have difficulty with it. I'm going to waste my time walking around, putting tefillin on people, but I've gotten to understand the Chabad mind. And you see these young people, you go to the shopping malls in Israel, for the sake of argument, go to Kanyon Hadar in Talpiyot. Every day by about 10:30, there's an American origin Chabadnik there walking around with tefillin, and people are waiting for him to come. The people working there As a Litvak, I can get angry. I can say, what kind of Oislav are you? What kind of Russia are you? Why don't you wake up early in the morning and go to shul and put on tefillin and do what a good Jew has to do? That's as a Litvak. But a Chabadnik views it. He is a Jew who doesn't have the strength of character to do it totally properly. Let me help him cross the bridge. And look at the look on their faces. They're lined up, the tefillin, some put on a talit, they say Shema, and that chassid is so happy. He did something for somebody else. Very fascinating. That's more than anything what Rav Lessin taught me, to be concerned with others. How did Rabbi Yisrael put it? My colleague's physical, temporal needs are my spiritual needs. And this is, doesn't this take you back to Lakewood, the story I told you, where I needed change. I don't know why I needed change, maybe to buy a newspaper, whatever. I needed change. I had a quarter, and I was asking for change. And the Mashgiach, the Alter Mashgiach, Rav Nosson Wachtfogel, who also is a YU product, although his grandchildren will heedily deny it today, but he Rav Nosson too, the 1920s, Rav Shmuel Belkin's Chavruta, and Rav Nosson asked me, what am I looking for? I said, I'm trying to get change. And he took me by the arm, and he went with me to this one and that one. Do you have change of a quarter? He evidently felt if he would ask for the change, he'll get it a lot quicker. And imagine his concern that I want change of a quarter. My physical need becomes his spiritual goal. What Musa, what a moment, what a time. And I want to make another comment. I want to tell a story I've never told before, and I've often thought about this. Often, look, we shift gears in life. And there's no question the grandchildren I'm raising here in Israel are raised. My grandchildren are older than I am today. The great-grandchildren I'm attempting to raise in Israel. There's no question that we're raising them with a different culture, with different goals, with a different challenge than we were raised in the United States. And I have to acknowledge that, you know, I saw the kids in America, a kid of 13, 14, what's he concerned with and what's he looking for, and a high school and summer camp and a car and driving lessons. And a kid here from 13 on, all they're concerned with is how they're going to do army, what they're going to do in the army, and what chesda, which chesda, what type of chesda, and the kravi, atudai, and their whole life centers around what's coming up ahead of them, the moment of maturity when they go from youth to old age in a very quick period, the Israeli Defense Forces. Okay. You often wonder, you shift gears, new country, new ideas, new goals, new visions. Imagine how Rav Lessin felt. Here he's coming from the hotbed of Eastern Europe. Here he's coming from Slabodka. And not only Rav Lessin, of all my rabbeim, think for a moment where they were coming from. And you're coming into the United States of America's Yeshiva University, located in Washington Heights. Everyone thinks it's part of the Bronx. People don't realize that Washington Heights is part of Manhattan, but everyone thinks it's part of the Bronx. There is some truth to it, if you know the little British Washington Bridge that separates Washington Heights from the Bronx. There is some truth that it's not really the heart of Manhattan. It's more like the Bronx than Manhattan. And you're coming into this climate and the kids and their values and what they're looking for. And I often wondered how they adjusted to the reality of what was in the Alter Heim, in the old home, and what you have in the United States. And here I want to tell you a little fascinating story. Mashkiach remarried in the United States. And he lived across the street from the yeshiva. And I was in his home quite a few times, and his wife would place cookies, cake, hot tea. The Europeish people only drank hot tea. I get it. Analyzed myself, I'd much rather go for a cold Coke than a hot tea, but that may be a result of growing up in the United States or growing or spending formative 50 years in the state of Israel. And one time, here I am sitting in the Mashgiach's house, and I'm finished the cake, finished the tea, and I make a bracha achrona, which is the natural act to do, right or wrong. And the Mashgiach says to his wife, Nemakuk an Americana kind. Take a look, an American kid making a bracha achrona. And I'll never forget that I interpreted the nachat that you could take the Torah from Eastern Europe, from pre-World War I Eastern Europe, when Torah was on the streets, gewalget auf dem Gas, they say about Tel's yeshiva that if you walked into the fields surrounding Tel's, you could smell the Tzais HaChayshin and the Nativa. The smell was in the air. And you come from such an environment, Slabodka, Kovna, Mir, and here you are in the United States of America as a cultkeit, such coldness and assimilation, and a million Jews in the Bronx, and we made a cheshbon if 1/100th of 1% we shema Torah mitzvah, shema Shabbos, I'm overstating the case. And here, take a look, the nachat, an Americanische kind, an American kid, and he's making a bracha achrona. And those of you who studied with me, the 31 years I taught women, and I taught over 11,000 women in the 31 years I taught women. Actually, the first class of women I taught was in 1971 in Machon Golden, and had 31 students in that class. So I knew 31 years later, it was time to start cutting back. And I used to give lectures on dating and marriage, what the young people needed, some guidance. And I remember my lectures, you want to know if the boy is really from, everyone promised from kite, it's very simple. But is he really from? I said, watch if he makes a bracha achrona. And I have to tell you, I had some girls, parents came crying to me that this girl wouldn't go out with this boy again because he did not make a bracha achrona. I told her, all right, take it, don't take it. Torah misinai chuk v'lo yavar. But very interesting, a bracha achrona, it's not benching. Benching is a big deal. It's a big ceremony. I start benching. Wow. But a bracha achrona, and those were the words, Nemakuk, an Americana kind, an American kid. And, you know, the Mashgiach knew my parents were born in America too already. It wasn't that common in the yeshiva when I came in 51, or when I met the Shanghai crowd in 47, 48. It wasn't that common that a kid already should be a third-generation American, that your grandparents came teenagers, your parents were born in Harlem, and libo chashke b'torah, and Baruch Hashem, miracles have happened. And these people played a role. They should have nachat, an Americanische kind, and sometimes these Americanische kinds went way beyond the Europäische generations, or something, because Walgit sich to the United States, wandered to America. More than that, and here's where Rabbi Rubin and I both have fond memories. YU was it's a regular college, open doors, everything available, every type of course. This is a question unto itself. I told you more than once, we always used to complain I had classes in English literature where half the class, the professors would curse, maledict. I remember one professor went after Rabbi Belkin. Every class, he maledicted him, freedom of speech. You have that in NYU right now. I got to America, a professor in Bernard Revel Graduate School, Professor Olson, came out against Trump for recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish people. Right now, you read about it or not, a terrific outcry, the OU challenge to YU. I don't believe YU was answered. Academic freedom, they call it. So you have every type of challenge and every type of choice available to you. Could be it's a good idea to prepare a student for life. I would like to believe that a student who learns how to choose properly can handle life when life is overwhelming with the freedom of choice. Yes, Yitzchak.
Littman was called the Mashiach, a Kishuv
Macha. A Kishuv Macha. Littman was a character par excellence who had learned in his youth. He was a Talmud Chacham. And the anecdotal story, which could never be proved, I write about it in Revel, but I said this is what is being said. I could never really prove it one way or another. They say when he came for an interview with Rabbi Revel to get a job in yeshiva teaching philosophy, he wore tzitzit out like a yeshiva boy from his youth. And when Revel saw a gate mitzitzit in Dreisen, Rabbi Revel was thrilled and hired him on the spot. Littman, you should know, made a deal with Rabbaron Lichtenstein, and this can be checked out. I recall the deal was that Rabbaron doesn't have to pay attention to the lectures, and he has to go through Shelet Tshivat Rashba and show Littman wherever the Rashba dealt with a philosophical issue in his lectures. You follow? That's what I recall. But it has to be checked. I think he gave him a B in return for not listening but going through the Rashba. I would like someone to check and see whether Aaron got an A or a B. I hold he deserved an A for showing Littman all the Tshuvat HaRashba that deal with Jewish philosophy. But Littman was a character par excellence. But this was yeshiva in our time. Remember Lainoff, and there were others, and all, and what went on with Beowulf, and everything with sex. It could be everything is sex. I mean, God have mercy, all the scandals we have today that we couldn't dream about growing up. So Thursday, there was an hour. The yeshiva ended a half hour early. Yeshiva ended at 2:30, and at 3:30, you began the college, so that yeshiva reads the morning program contributed a half hour, and the afternoon program contributed a half hour. And that hour, you had clubs. And yet every type of club under the world, the Hebrew club, an English literature club, you explored a baseball club, I don't know, sports clubs, you explored topics that you didn't do in class. And we had a Musa club, and that was something very special. Later in life, when I did my own research, I learned that in Slabodka, going all the way back to Kelm and before, there was what's called a musavad. The idea was you took a topic and you explored it. For instance, I remember with the Mashkiach, it wasn't a big Musa club. I was a member, Yitzchak was a member, who else was a member? Rabbi Blau was a member, Yossi Blau, Shimi Aida, Zichrona Levracha was a member. We had a whole little nucleus, maybe 6-7 individuals, that they went to the Musa club, the Vad HaMusa. And I remember we took a topic, let's say prayer, and we analyzed prayer. And I'll never forget the Mashgiach was very upset. One of the names I just mentioned, the day before during Mincha, in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, he looked at his watch. Could you imagine? You're davening. I remember it like yesterday. He's davening Shmoneh Esrei, and suddenly he looks at his watch. And I remember the Mashgiach didn't say a word, but he caught it. But in the Musa club, we discussed what Kavana means, to forget about time, don't be influenced, don't rush. I remember the Mashgiach talking about davening on Shabbos, that the very fact that it's Shabbos, the davening has to be more lebetic, more alive, more meaningful. And this is something I've taken with me until today. I've never yet been able to say Kedusha on Shabbos morning. It's an impossibility. It takes me so much longer to daven the Shmon Esrei, Yismach Moshe b'machnat chelko ki yevet ne'man karat alav. Ach, what a debt of gratitude we owe the Mashgiach. But it wasn't only davening. It was the whole concept, hakarat hatov, doing someone a favor, stepping out of line, not your natural lifestyle, to help someone else. And I want to tell you, one gift I got from the Mashgiach that has influenced my entire life until this very moment. So many years have passed and nothing has changed. And I'll tell you what that gift is. Very simple. The greatest enemy we have in life is time. Time marches on. There's so much we have to do. There's so much we have to learn. So much we have to conquer. So much we have to accomplish. Time marches on. The worst thing in the world is to waste time. So the Mashgiach taught us. Later I saw this goes back to Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. Every night you figure out what you have to do the next day. And for instance, let's say you have to go to the supermarket. Let's say you have to go to the drugstore. So figure out how to do it where you can do one after the other. Not that you go to the supermarket, come home, and say, oy vey, I have to go to the drugstore. Again, you have to go out, you have to waste time. Do everything with a minimum of time wasted. Mark it off. Erev Shabbos. I live with the concept, Rube Goldberg, any emergency that has to happen happens on Erev Shabbos. Have a list prepared. I notice now they have it to put on your fridge. I've been making an Erev Shabbos list for the last 70 years already. Put it up. Forget about, make a list what has to be done. I can remember one time we were going to my daughter. She had just moved into a new area in Yerushalayim, Pisgat Zev Mizrach. So we're going to my daughter for Shabbos. And suddenly we arrive and there she is on the street with her husband and maybe a child or two. There's no water in Pisgat Zev Mizrach. So we had to shoot back to our house. She's bringing food, but the house was in Shabbos stick. I took the list. Within 15 minutes, I had everything ready, 100% to catch Lich Benching, ready for Shabbos. This is organization. This is Musa. Be the master of your life, the master of your time. Baruch Hashem, until today, of all the tens of thousands, if not more, questions I have gotten, I have answered every question, every letter, outside of two. Two I have not answered. Everything else has been answered. As of this morning, I'm totally up to date. Mark, you're wondering what I didn't answer? Very simple. One Lo Aleinu was Satma was trying to beat up my Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro. So they wanted me to certify that the Rav had a PhD. I know why, because they called him doctor and people accused them. How do you call Rabbi Soloveitchik doctor, Harav, or at least Harav doctor? So, and they were trying to beat up on Mark. So I figured to help Satma beat up Mark, I'm not Mechuyev, you understand? The other one was worse. I actually burned what I got, L'Kayim. There's a certain Talmud of mine who is very famous as the head of the so-called Orthodox, the Rabbi of Begays, without mentioning his name, Lo Aleinu. So he had someone from England send me a whole kuntris of his Chidushei Torah of what it means, Lo Tishkap Mishkevei Zachai. I don't want to go any further. He later publishes a book, Mikan Brech, and you can throw up from all this. So I took it and I burned it. Ad Kedei Kach, Ribon Shalem, Sefer Torah, Shekatav Min, Nu, Safin Oto. Those are the only two questions that I didn't answer. Let me go one step further. Rakafararim Chelek Aleph. Recognize? Okay. Let me enjoy New York Yankee water. Maybe I'll become like Stanton and the judge. I should have their strength. Can I inherit? I'll see you tomorrow, B'ezrat Hashem. Now, let me go back to college. Want to make this as the high point of the Shia now. Close to the end, but very important. In my junior year in college, they announced a $50 bond prize for someone to do original research on American Jewish history. On Jewish history, I should say. It's a true story now. So, David, I do the research on the 1924 rabbinical visit to America. Do you know, I'm heads and shoulders above anyone else, but a big debate of whether they're going to give me the prize. Because Rabbi Dr. Regis, Gedenk's Professor Regis, held there's no Jewish history in America. American Jewish history is worthless. Not one Jew has survived. Everyone is a goy gamur. Vixatius, Gedenk's Vixatius, the top-rated tennis player with seven generations from the first rabbi in America, a total wasp. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Vic, look it up, as Casey Stengel says. It's in the record book. Vixatius. S-C-X-I-A-S. Ask anyone from Spanish Portuguese synagogue. So finally I get the prize. And this was the first research I ever did. It was published a number of times, but I republished it in Rakafadar and Chelik Aleph, the 1924 rabbinical delegation visit. Okay. The Mashgiach told me something that totally shook me up, and this is, don't know how to say this in English, this is a Musa Deher. It's something, Musa, you have to feel it. And he told the following story. They arrived in America from Europe. They're put up on a hotel on the Lower East Side, and the first time they come out of the hotel, Shabbos morning, there are Jews with pushcarts selling on Shabbos. What you have here in Israel now with the Markolim, etc., etc. God have mercy. By the way, and the reason you have it here is because you have it in America. When I was growing up in America, there were blue laws. You couldn't sell on Sunday. There was a Jew named the Charlie Pam, Avram Pam's younger brother, who was fined for keeping his grocery open on Sunday. And Charlie went to court, went all the way to the Supreme Court of New York. He said, I'm ashamed of Shabbos. But the law reads, they fined him $1. But the law reads, you can't be open on Sunday. Today, an Israeli travels, everything is open Sunday. Why? He's not anti-religious. You want to be religious? You're a moron who wants to be bound by those ancient laws? That's your choice. But let me, freedom, this is Lapid. What, Lapid? I'm not anti-religious. Of course, they don't understand. If we are open Sunday, we become murderers. Our only claim to this land is that we're Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. Part of being a Jew is Shem Shabbos B'Parhesia. Part of being a Jew is Kahal Yisrael, Adat Yisrael. We're not an individual religion. We're both individuals. We're part of Am Yisrael. So if everything's open, Shabbos, Lo Aleinu, what are we doing here in this land? We've murderers. Every Arab we killed. we had no right to. When we're good Jews, then we reclaim the land after 2,000 years of exile, the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, etc. Anyway, be it as it may, they come out of the hotel Shabbos morning and they're shaking. They're overwhelmed in Europe. No one would be Machal Shabbos like that in front of a Rav. Yeah, people were Machal Shabbos, the old story, they were smoking a cigarette. They blew it out quickly, they put it in their pocket. The longer the rabbi spoke to them, the bigger the burn of their clothes. But no one would be Machal Shabbos. And here, America, freedom, come out. They're ready to faint. What a sight. And then the Mashgiach says, the second week they came out, they weren't overwhelmed. The third week, the Levush Mordechai, who was one of the elder great Rabbanim of the generation, who had been raised in the atmosphere of Musa, the Levush Mordechai Sam turns to them and says, Mizayin Allah Mechalalei Shabbos. We're all candidates for Chilul Shabbos. That we can see a sight like this and become used to it? Something's the matter with us. See, this is Musa. This is analyzing yourself. Not just going up to the moon, not just getting a PhD in physics and chemistry and biology, etc. Analyzing yourself. I never forgot that story. You know when I heard it again? Years later, Abhanach Fishman, the Shanghai crowd, reading about Chetzkel Levenstein, it's the exact same story. They were living, had special quarters, money coming in from America. They come out of where they were living to walk to Beit Aron, to walk to the shul, to walk where the Mir Yeshiva was reestablished in Shanghai, and they would see the Chinese coolies dead in the streets. No, the first time you see a body, you're flabbergasted, shocked. Second time, you nimbly jump over the body. Rav Chatzkel Levenstein, the third time, gave a shmuis, we are murderers. If we can become used to human beings lying in the street, dead bodies, and jump over them and not say a word, we are candidates to become murderers. Meiridikvot. You should know that this repeats itself in the Israeli army. When you deal with the Chevra Kadisha, and I've been in war twice, I've been in the army many years, but I've been in front lines twice. Battle, the most important act is to move the bodies, lo aleinu, back to where the Chevra Kadisha set up a mortuary. You don't want to create a feeling for the soldiers that we have no hope, we have no future. Despair, anguish, even on Shabbos, we move bodies for that very reason. It helps the spirit of the fighting. It's obvious what I'm saying. And not always can you find the challah like the Gemara in the Shabbos with David HaMelech, where you can put a challah on the body and then becomes a basus ladava muksa sheinu muksa, etc. So, Chevra Kadisha, they go out of their way not to become cold to this sight. You have to be able to do and act, but you have to be able to feel the tragedy of the price that we pay. This is a tremendous Musa challenge to any Chevra Kadisha. Allah had kama v'kama the Chevra Kadisha of the Israeli army. And this is a Musavot. This is Rav Lesson. This is spiritual greatness. I can't describe it any differently. And let me give one more example of Rav Lesson. This story I write about in Washington, beginning on page 48. It happened to me. Came back from Lakewood, I'm in yeshiva. Decided to stay in yeshiva, to stay at yeshiva, yeshiva college, YU, popular language. I was exposed already, my first lecture, this deal I made with my mother, we'll try it for 1 year. So my first lecture in college was Professor Louis Feldman, who just died, Zichrono Tzadeh, Zichrono Tzadik Levracha. I'll never forget that lecture as long as I live. We walk into class. He was his very first lecture. He's brand new to Yeshiva College. He's taking the place of Professor Alexander Brody. If anyone is 90 years or older listening, you'll know who I'm talking about, Professor Brody. And he gives this lecture on the Hammurabi Code and the Gilgamesh Epic. And I've used that lecture when I used to teach Hashkafra on a collegiate level, and I've used it 1,000 times over. What a lecture. Showing Moshe Emet, the Torah Toh Emet, and if I can quote Professor Feldman, Torah doesn't need to be proven, but it always helps when science and Torah can accommodate each other, supplement each other. So here I am back in yeshiva, but now Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur are coming, and we make a special minyan in the Bernard Revel Graduate School, a little hut across the street from yeshiva. This hut doesn't exist anymore. It was built by federal funds after World War II. And we have a special minyan with the mashkiach, a yeshivish minyan. Whether it's a good idea to make a special minyan is a different story, but in your youth you should daven a few times properly, so the rest of your life you'll be nourishing yourself from those few times that you daven properly. So we're davening with the mashkiach, and Fana Ila, the mashkiach, gets up, and we had about 110, 120 people, and the mashkiach says, "Mizol Nishtailin, we shouldn't rush with the Ila, shouldn't look at your watch." Now, how many of you were in the rabbinate? In the rabbinate, what I used to do, I used to daven Marav before Tkiyat HaShofar, that the Balabatim shouldn't run away, and I finished Tkiyat HaShofar exactly on time, finished Marav, it's not Israel, Baruch Hashem, 99% of the people stay. We still have, in Tatamon, where my children run a shul, we still have a few Supreme Court judges, a chveisman, here you're finishing Yom Kippur, daven Marav at least, all right, Baruch Hashem. And Mashiach says, Min daf nishtailin, it's eternity, it's nitzchiyot. We didn't eat, we didn't drink, it's just a day of being with God. Oh, what a talk. And there's a Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shmuel Eliezer Volk, a telsha, with a temper, a kohen. Who remembers Rav Volk? And Rav Volk yells out, Vretishkeit, Nadishkeit, what are you speaking? Foolishness is the kinder and freuen and fast. There are children and women here and people are fasting. And the mashkiach, and he washed the mashkiach's face in mud. Oh, was I embarrassed for the mashkiach. I'm a kid. Few weeks go by, mashkiach comes over to me, and a younger man is looking for a shidduch. A man is looking for a shidduch for his daughter, a Beis Yaakov graduate, and I proposed, he just died, he was the gabbai of the minyan, Reese, and I proposed to the mashgiach, Reese, look at the shidduch, epastich for Beis Yaakov Meidel, Reese is looking for a shidduch. It's hard to speak English. A pasach. He's proper for a Beis Yaakov girl. Zugapas. For a Beis Yaakov girl. He's appropriate. Good. Sure enough, they get engaged, they get married. The marriage lasted until... I was so upset this past year to read that he died. He was the gabbai of Dominion, a Washington Heights boy. A few weeks later, the mashkiach comes over to me, can I speak to you? We'll step outside into the hallway. So I step outside, the Mashgiach tells me he's looking for a shidduch, there's a Rosh Yeshiva, his daughter needs a shidduch, and I was successful once, maybe I can be successful again. Who could I suggest, and who is the girl that he's looking for a shidduch? The daughter of Reb Shmuel Leizer Volk. Wow. And his whole being, Reb Volk, and the need, and the concern, and I'm thinking to myself, this is the man that embarrassed you so. Yom Kippur passed. Let me tell you, that little story was better than 99 Musa talks. Did it influence my way of thinking, my heart, my soul, my life? Wow. Give you many examples. I remember one time in Michala, some girl acted funny. I even remember her name, going back maybe early 80s, late 70s. So I remember my students, said, Rebbe, why don't you tell her off? I said, no, you don't know, something's bothering her. Can't tell a student off. Impossible. You got to go further. Understand humans are humans. Rabbi Koopman used to have a shtick, you lock the door at 8:30, classes begin, door locked. Never could get me to lock the door. Humans are humans, you never can tell what. The young women, married women, husbands, children, please. That's why I amounted to nothing. I could never, all the office I had over the last 59 years, turned it down on the spot. Goes back to the Mashgiach. I knew what I can do and where I belong. Can't. To be a dean, to be a Rosh Yeshiva, to be a president, you have to have that ability to be a Chaver Knesset. Not for me. Musa. Musa destroyed Rakefet. Baruch Hashem. Ashreinu Shezachinu. Ashreinu Shezachinu. Rav Lesson was just a moment in time. Rabbi Belkin, in his generosity towards the refugees, he changed the face of the yeshiva. See, when he took over, he brought in Rav Lesson, Rav Lifshitz, brought in an entire new world. Rav Bornstein, Rav Gorelick, afterwards Rav Fishman, Rav Yankelovich. It's before the American-born Rebbeim took over. But that was a golden, golden period that enabled a kid like myself to grow up in two worlds, ultimately the ability to merge three different worlds. Have more to say in Rav Lesson, and then we come to, of course, the Hu Ole Akulam Mori Rebbe Hamuvhak. Rav Soloveitchik. Okay, Yitzchak, don't run away yet. I have a world I want to mention.
Maybe I'll pick it up tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay, you got to catch the Shirin Yeshurin, okay? Why did you have a helicopter at your disposal? A Rav with such a career.
I got to catch this year in the
Shtibla. In the Shtibla. And Herbie, you're a survivor. You went through so much. The government should make a helicopter available to you. Plain and simple.
You ever hear Harry Potter?
Yeah. Okay, my dear students, let me just reiterate then. I want to make some comments. First of all, what did we do today? We continued Rav Lesson. I try to give you a little bit of the heart of Musa. I need not apologize. Some of you know I've researched Musa from every point of view. I gave shiurim on it. The years and years worth. Gadlat Adam, Kshiflat Adam. It's the greatest movement ever, and it never caught on. Its demands are too difficult for the average person. And this is a reality of life, and we have to live with it. And I'll show you tomorrow a more realistic attitude when I deal with the Chabad. But this was Rav Lessen, and I'll never forget that comment, Nemakuk an Amerikanische Kind. Think about that. I just want to call your attention, the latest issue of Tradition, this is so sad, the whole issue is devoted to sexual abuse in the Torah community. I don't know. And here is Yosef Blau, who we spoke about, Rabbi Blau, his son Yitzchak, my Talmud, also writes, Mark Dratch, my Talmud, your father also writes, I know it's, but this is the reality, and I can tell you with the right wing, it bothers me so, this concept of not publishing pictures of women, and all that goes with it, with Aleph Frumkeit, more sexual abuse than ever. It hurts. Anyway, I'll put this in the library downstairs. If anyone wants to see it, you can see it. This is Hamayan, the latest issue. If anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. This is for Yitz Rubin. You'll take it tomorrow. This is the Sheyurim of Rav Asher Weiss. I mentioned Eliyahu Soloveitchik in class. This is from Wikipedia, his biography. He was a grandson of Reb Chaim Volozhin. He was the uncle of the Beit HaLevi. And he taka wrote what I said was correct on the gospel, on Christianity. He sought to demonstrate the common grounds of belief. And he has relatives today. His direct descendant is the president of Yale University, Peter. Peter Salovey, very Salovey, whatever name, very interesting from one family. This is Yeshiva University. I have quite a few copies here of what Yeshiva University will do about the professor who denounced Israel, denounced Trump, Yerushalayim. Now, how do you combine that? Axiomatic Yerushalayim, academic freedom. Here's an interesting article on why the Rebbe used Benedictine liquor, which was created by monks. Is it kosher? Isn't it kosher? And excuse me. Well, what's the latest? It's a very interesting article. The Rebbe used it. Here, Lowell. What? Yeah, but what about today? Does it have a heksha? I saw yesterday my grandson, my son-in-law gave me cherry herring to make a kiddush on, and I take a look. It has an OU today, kol hakabod. Those are four articles on YU, and here lo aleinu, this is hard to comprehend. Tradition and transgression at Trefa Banquet 2.0. And it's a whole description of these women and men, and the more chassid they could shove in their mouths, the better. And they're appearing before the Supreme Court today to desecrate the cult of Hamaravi. If you want to see how small a nation Israel is, my grandson knows this individual from the IDF, in the army. It's a very inspiring story of a kid born without fingers on one hand, who becomes a frontline soldier, even though he originally was exempt. Here is the shul of the week, and this is the shul that my son-in-law runs the shul. My grandchildren grew up in the shul, and you know it's a small country, when, wow, by Knesset Chazon Yecheskel Rechov HaPamach Yerushalayim, shul of the week. And here, Ashrei Yayin Ra'at Hazot. Here's a couple that got married 1.5 minute walk from here. Sam, do you know where they got married? On the terrace, right off the floor here. I can show you where the Prime Minister stood, Menachem Begin, and I can show you where the President of Israel stood, Yitzhak Navon. Here is Yosef Hatzadik Mendelovich and his wife, my student, Gahatya Sarusi. And believe it or not, they were just honored at the Kremlin Rabbera Lazar. See, it wasn't the Russian government that honored them, but Rabbera Lazar, who was Putin's rabbi, presented them with an award for their Mesirat Nefesh in practicing Yiddishkeit. Let's see, the article is something to behold. Amud 26. Hard to believe. If you remember how we davened and prayed and demonstrated for Yosef HaTzadik. And here's his whole family inside the Kremlin, the square in front of the Kremlin wall. His three sons, his four daughters, must be in-laws as well. Here are his three sons with him. And what a story. My dear students, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up again tomorrow at 9:05 a.m. until we meet again. Health and happiness. Das Vidanya.